Welcome, everybody. It's the Too High Podcast. I am Seth Galina in my apartment, and that is Deontay Lee outside in San Diego, California. What's going on, dude?
I'm chilling, man. I'm chilling. Let's not bore everybody with weather talk. I would just say that it's not cold.
Okay, it is cold here, and that's done. We're done. Yeah. I said we were done last week. Now we're done for real.
Yes, I'm finished.
Okay, so let's get into it. Let's just get right into it. I want to talk about something that I've been thinking about for a while in terms of like how analytics kind of works with how we've viewed football through this lens of analytics in the past, you know, 10 years or whatever it's been, and how I think how teams have played football in the NFL have kind of skewed kind of what we've believed to be true. But most of that might be based on just what teams want to do. And so I think, you know, we had this conversation a lot about what the Legion of Boom Seahawks has meant to the NFL. But I think in a league where everybody is playing that type of defense and how that defense spread, just when places like us were starting to chart certain things, you know, PFF data goes back to 2006, but we don't have, for example, we don't have coverage data going all the way back to 2006. You know, we have the grades, we have some formational stuff, but we don't have, you know, the routes for everybody going all the way back, et cetera, et cetera. So like it's somewhere in the mid 2010s where we have start having all this data. And then once we try and put it all together and say like, okay, well, you know, interior defensive linemen aren't an important position or a less important position, and linebackers are a less important position. I think it's like, okay, well, yes, because the NFL was that's just what teams were doing at that time. If you're going to play in this, like, you know, Seattle style defense, then yeah, maybe your inside linebackers mean a little less because everyone's gapped out, and maybe your interior defensive linemen is less valuable because everyone's gapped out. But eventually that was like, football is always cyclical. We talk about it all the time. So like eventually that was not going to be true. So it's hard to like take what we know about the game. And you know, neither of us are data scientists, but we still understand like where the game is going and stuff like that. But like take what we know about the game from this lens at this very specific time point in football history and then just project it forward till, you know, infinity. And I think that's something that we always have to watch out for when we're doing these projections and being like, oh, this is true, this is true, this is true. It's only true because the NFL is choosing us to let it be true in this moment in time. The NFL wants to stop the run, so they put a safety down, they get in a gap out. Well, then, yeah, you probably don't need the best nose tackle in the world. It helps, but you probably don't need him because there's a guy behind him, there's a guy next to him. But as we've seen already in a new world of defense, the past year, the past 2 years, like, oh, all of a sudden, and, you know, our colleague Eric Eager wrote an article about how the value of defensive linemen are skyrocketing because of this new type of system. So it is interesting to be like, hey, yes, some of this stuff might have been true about the value of positional value and coverage versus pass rush and all that stuff at one point in this very specific time period, but we kind of have to always keep evolving as defenses shift around.
I mean, yeah, like one of the things that, you know, and I don't really even know how to properly articulate this.
As you can tell, I had trouble articulating right? it as well.
Like, especially given the fact that we work for a place, obviously, that collects all this data, and the work that we do is about contextualizing the data that we collect. But I mean, football, you know, fundamentally is a small sample size sport, right? Like we talk about that all the time. And then just like you said, because it's a small sample size sport, when things change, it's typically so rapid that all the data gets really noisy, and then it becomes hard to create these lines of comparison. So what we're really running into in a lot of ways is just like an era of a lot of bad data, right? Like that's kind of what we're dealing with. Not bad because it's not valuable, but bad because it's not an accurate representation of everything else that may be happening or the way that things are changing. So to your point about like all the single high four down stuff, like the data that you're pulling for that If you're trying to be predictive, it really is only predictive if you are stretching it out over other teams and other places that are doing that one thing, right? Like, you can't take, all of the single high stuff that the Seahawks did, for example, and say like, okay, this is how offenses attack that. We're going to extrapolate that and say that this is now the way that all offenses or all defenses should approach things, going forward. Because when something happens, and this is part of the conversation that we had on the Athletic podcast with Robert Mays, right? Like, with the proliferation of too high, it changes the way the offenses approach things, right? And if you have this growing data set of things that are happening this one particular way, as opposed to, I don't know, it's 2021, you can say maybe like the last 9 years of football that you were dealing with before, like, it's hard to find, these correlations between one thing and the next. And it's hard to be measured and balanced in your analysis because of it, right? Like, it looks like it presents as a violent swing in trends because it kind of has been, because that's the way the football goes. And then from there, it's like, okay, well, how do you really explain that this is something very specific? Not only is it very specific, but you also can't use the other very specific thing that was happening before as an accurate reference point for what's happening now. So to that point about like the changing in value for interior defensive linemen, I think that we're going to have more of a conversation about what's going on with the linebacker position as things change, because what's going to be asked of linebackers in more of an odd front, in more of a split safety world, is just entirely different from what you would typically see, in a single high world. So, we kind of talk about like the value of linebackers in a single high context. Their value, it's not that they're not valuable, because obviously a guy like Bobby Wagner, which you talk about being able to kind of balance out the coverage based on the way that certain formations and routes work out, that has an immense value. But if you want to talk about them fundamentally, it's like, oh, they help stop the run. They're the second layer in the run defense. It's a little different in single high when you're gapped out, meaning all I have to do is work downhill as a linebacker versus what my value is as a linebacker when it's an odd front. So now both B gaps are closed. So you have all these linemen who are covered up. Well, what is fitting the run look like there? Because now you actually have to clean up the mistakes that happen up front, whereas you have more bodies to clean up your mistakes when you're in kind of that four down single high world. And a lot of this stuff really kind of gets into the weeds of that. So I think that really, and this is, I think, part of probably why we talk about this stuff as often as we do, is because it needs, these kinds of conversations need this context, because a lot of the data is just going to keep growing. And it's going to look a little funny and kind of off kilter based on what we've known or what we've become comfortable with as kind of like the meta, especially in the NFL.
Right, exactly. Like, we're just so comfortable with a league that was doing a certain thing and trying to stop the run. I mean, that's really the league has always tried to stop the run, but they were doing it in this very specific way, which was spinning that second safety down into the box and then playing gapped out in a single gap look, right? This is what we were. We were a four down single gap, everyone in the box, and we were trying to stop the run that way. So in that context, you know who's going to look really valuable? Outside cornerbacks and a free safety. So all of a sudden coverage becomes this thing like, oh, you got to go and get coverage people. And it's like, yeah, you got to go and find. I got to stop using these guys. Okay, I'm going to use the Jaguars as an example. You have to go find AJ Bouye and Jalen Ramsey for that 1 year to overlap in the seams, to be able to play. And we say this all the time: when you want to play one high, you can get singled up down the field, right? Whether it's cover three or cover one, once things clear vertically, you are one on one down the field. So yeah, you're gonna need these type of corners, but that obviously changes as we get into a too high world. Like, maybe we get into, I've seen a lot of cover, maybe because I just watched the Bills and they get a lot of cover two against them, but like, I've seen a lot of cover two recently. And it's like, all right, well, the cornerback position is a lot different when you're playing cover two. The body type is different. When we saw that in the 2000s, where you had bigger corners who had to be able to take on, and beat up receivers a little more than you see in a cover one, cover three world. So, the cornerback position is going to change. Like you said, inside linebacker is going to change completely, because you got to be able to do not just X, but you got to do X, Y, Z if you are an out-gapped linebacker, inside linebacker. And same, obviously, with the interior defensive lineman. And for that matter, exterior defensive linemen outside.
I was going to say edge rusher. The idea of the edge rusher changes in this world as well. Like a lot of positions in the way that we look at them, they are fundamentally different. So to your point about like cover two, the reason why the Bears are good in cover two is because you got these freak linebackers, right? Like, because that's what it requires in order to make it work. Now that also means that it's not the corner doesn't matter, but at the end of the day, like your corner is doing one very, very specific thing within this coverage, and they're protected in certain ways because you're asking more of other players to be able to do the job for you versus cover three, which is where we were just at, you know, an era ago. And like you said, what that means for your corners and for your safety in the middle of the field, and now what that does not mean for your inside linebackers, and in turn, what that does mean for your edge rusher. So now you're in a world where like, okay, we need star rushes on the edge, right? Because that's adding a quote unquote layer to our defense, is the threat of being able to affect the quarterback. And now in this cover four world, you don't need necessarily to have the same stable of pass rush that you would need in that four down single high look, right? Now you can maybe live with, you know, with what I think the Chargers are ultimately going to try to build towards, right? Which is like, okay, we have an elite pass rusher in Bosa. We've got another outside linebacker who can do a little bit of everything in Uchenna Nwosu, right? And then from there, what are they missing? Interior defensive line. So the defense doesn't always look like it works. And because they don't have good interior defensive linemen, it doesn't really matter how good or how poorly their inside linebacker play has been. And I would probably grade it out as like decent, average at the inside linebacker position, but they can't add value if the other positions aren't taken care of. And they have some of the other pieces around it. So you're just seeing like these differences in what makes a defense work. Because you cannot just take all the same pieces and just apply them from one defense to the next with the expectation that it'll just work out that way. That's just not really the way that this game is designed to be played. And, you know, maybe one day, you know, this may only last for 3 to 4 years. That's the other part of it, right? Like, we might get very comfortable in this. Okay, odd fronts, too high. We're playing quarters. We're playing quarter halves. Oh, well, the offenses are doing this now. So now we got to go back to Tampa 2. Oh, offenses are doing that now. Maybe we like cover zero more. You know, whatever the case may be, these things flip. They change so violently, so quickly. Like I was saying, like you do have to be flexible. And this is where I think the value, not that it takes anything away from the value of data, but this is where the value of contextualizing the information that you're taking in visually is very valuable, because you're going to need that as a reference point, because the data is not always going to be equipped to tell the entire story, because what you need with the data is a point of comparison. And right now, the sample size of what we're seeing defensively now is growing at a point where, and it's not completely established yet, we can't really say definitively, okay, this is football now. All we're really talking about is like, okay, here's what's coming, right? Here's what it looks like is coming, and to be prepared for how that changes the context of the league. But we have to be prepared, again, like I said, to be able to shift from, okay, it was that, not that anymore. Now it's this. So here's why that matters. Here's what that means, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, just to talk about edge rushers for a second, you know, the edge rusher in a world where you're gapped out, where you're in one high safety or whatever, he can be a little lighter. You know what I mean? Because he's got a guy behind him. And then if it's a pass, no problem, because I'm a twitchy edge rusher. Right. Well, you know, is that necessarily the case when you're out gapped? Like, do you want that type of player on the field? Right. Is the twitchy guy not going to get on the field as much because you want a bigger body guy, and you'll live with a less of a pass rusher because you need a guy who can take on a gap and fall back inside? Right. You know what I mean? And not get pushed around in the run game. Because there's a guy who's like, you know, sitting 3.5 yards away who's just going to clean everything up. So I think that whole situation is changing so rapidly. We talked about it so much, as how quickly this new football defense is being played. Like, it happened so quickly. This was like all these teams were really good playing one high, and then all of a sudden wanted to play it anymore. Everyone said, oh, we're going to run bear. That's it. Like, we're just going to run bear. We're going to try and play too high, do all that stuff. And then it's been wild to see. And it's almost like we need like two different eras of football before we start making too many judgments about about you know, value of players,
right,
to a certain degree. I mean, I think, and I'm not saying like analytics. I mean, look, I think there's, you know, when we talk about broad concepts, obviously going for it on fourth down is super important. That's something I want to talk about at some point because it bothers me. I don't want to derail the conversation too much, but I keep thinking about the punting and not punting and kicking field goals and going for it and stuff like that, because I'm just like, the NFL, every team is so close to each other. There's so yes. many close games that like you gotta figure out
every the best edge, ways. Man.
You
every
have edge. To, man. Like, I'm sorry, like the lower you go down in football, the less you probably need to do this. Though obviously, you know, finding the right times to go for it is good no matter what. But like in a league where everything is so damn tight, like, come on, like we got, like coaches got to do a better job at that thing this week. Anyways, don't want to derail it too much, but yeah, it's like all of this data that we have about football, especially the nuts and bolts, when we have coverage data, when we have route data, we have blocking data, like I said, formation data and blah, 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 all that really good, juicy stuff. It all comes out of 2015 on. You know what I mean? It all comes out of 2014 on. So it's tough to really, like, what football was from 2014 to 2021 is going to be a lot different than football going forward, and like it's tough to like make these the most thing is like probably not wise to make super definitive statements on the value of certain things sometimes.
Big agree. I think that puts a good bow on that.
All right, we're gonna talk about three NFL offenses going forward, but first it is CFB hashtag CFB talk with Seth and Deontay, presented, of course, by Manscaped. They just launched their new products, including their all-new premium body wash and a 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner. It's time to give yourself or someone who needs it the gift of beautiful skin, hair, and balls this holiday season. Go to manscaped.com and use promo code PFF for 20% off plus free shipping. Inside the Performance Package 4.0, you'll find the signature Lawnmower 4.0, the electric trimmer, which has proprietary advanced skin-safe technology to reduce cuts on your skin. It's also waterproof, so you can use it in the shower. They also launched their new 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner, which has key ingredients with benefits that includes hydrating, nourishing, conditioning the scalp, and strengthening your hair at the same time. Tis the season. So load up on all the Manscaped products that you can find and take them for yourself. Give them to a gift to anyone that you're shopping for this holiday season. That is the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. Go to manscaped.com. And for 20% off and free shipping, put promo code PFF. 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use promo code PFF. All right, CFB talk. Everyone predicted it to a certain degree, and then it happened. Utah hammered the shit out of Oregon. This has been one of the most underrated teams in the country over the past 2 months or so. And, you know, I said it on a podcast the other way. I just happen to be watching them every week because I'm a sicko. That's why. And they've been getting better and better. And then they just plowed right through Oregon, and it's kind of alleviated some tension, I think, within the college football rankings, which we'll get tomorrow night. Does that game kind of played out like you thought it would?
More or less. I mean, obviously, you don't expect the ass kicking to be to that degree, but in terms of like theoretically, yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, Stanford, you're not going to. You don't place the transitive property. You don't play the transitive property game too much in football. You try not to. So it wasn't so much that after watching the Stanford game, I thought that like, oh, well, they did this to a team that, you know, that beat Oregon. So therefore they will also beat Oregon this way. But if you watch the way that they play and you kind of judge that up against who Oregon is defensively this year, you could see the roadmap to them being able to be dominant on the ground the way that they were. Using all of these big bodies, like, it's a problem. Oregon defensively, they do have very physical guys, but for the most part, what they're trying to play fast. That's what that defense is. They want to play fast. And really, to me, the bigger thing is to give credit to Utah for finding a way to be able to use these big bodies and still be explosive somehow when they need to be. You know, being able to build out an efficient run game is something that's been, you know, a hallmark of this program under Kyle Whittingham, basically for his entire tenure there. Being able to kind of, you know, get these dink and dunk plays in the passing game specifically that are able to kind of keep them on schedule and allows them to kind of mash teams. So that to me, you know, I wasn't really shocked to see the way that that game played out. You know, you said this, you know, not only today, but last week when we were talking about the game, you know, when we were talking in private before we would record, this team has kind of been growing to this moment, basically, since like week three, week four of the season, you know, coming out of the gates a little bit rocky. And then, you know, you kind of have that whole Charlie Brewer thing or whatever with the quarterback leaving the program. So it looked like there was disarray, but really it kind of seems like from there they were really able to hone in on what their actual identity is. And since they've gotten back to doing what they do offensively, you know, they've just been a buzzsaw.
Yeah, and like it's too bad that you know, at the end of the day, they aren't going to be playing for. I mean, look, they could get to the Rose Bowl, obviously, if they make the if they kind of beat Oregon again in the Pac-12 championship game. Though I will say, Civil War coming up, don't count out the Beavers, man.
Yo,
the
Beavers can play, bro. Honestly, they can play, and they've snuck up on too many people in the Pac-12 for me to just dismiss that out of hand.
Yeah, I love the way they play offense there at Oregon. It is very similar to the way I would want to call an offense and do stuff, some of the stuff that they're doing schematically. So I'm interested in that game. I really think you could have an Oregon State win over Oregon next week. So yeah, but anyways, getting back to the Utah thing, it's just like it's too bad because they had these weird games early in the season and they were still trying to figure out who they were. Like you said, Charlie Brewer left the team, dude. They have. They had two deaths in their program. Two of the sad, like unbelievably sad stories there, and they're able to rally. I mean, no, I don't want to say that they had two tragedies in their program, and they played really, really hard. And they've always played hard, but they're getting the wins now, and I think that's really good, obviously for that program. So you know,
the only other thing I'll add for them that's been interesting is like what they've been defensively as well. How much more flexible they've been defensively this year versus other years. You know, I think that the hallmark of what we know this team defensively to be is what? Play with these enormous, you know, these enormous defensive linemen who eat up all this interior space and cause havoc, send a bunch of pressure and play cover one. Like, that's basically been their identity in the past since they've been in the Pac-12. And this year I've seen a lot more split safety stuff. Now, it's not like the majority of what they do. They are still going to play single high. More times than not, but I think that they've done a lot more to be flexible when they need to be playing cover two, playing quarters, playing quarter halves, you know, getting into those two high looks on passing downs or downs where they feel like the threat of the pass exists or they need it to fit the run a little bit differently. They've been able to lean on that, and it's done a lot for them in keeping offenses contained. You know, more times than not, you would expect a team like Oregon, even if they're going to have the kind of day defensively that they did, that they'd be able to move the ball as well. And Utah was able to take away a lot of their best stuff, too, on the defensive end. And I think a lot of that has just been that flexibility, that ability to just say, hey, you know, for this week, we need this one thing. Like against UCLA, they wanted to play too high because UCLA wants to get into a lot of weird formations, right? They want to try to out-leverage you, hit the edge, and punish you that way. So they decided to play more split safety stuff. So that way, when you get those unbalanced and those nub looks, you have better body presence in both directions. So being able to, you know, do those types of things, obviously watching what Joe Moorhead likes to do against a single high team and making the decision that, hey, we may need to have another thing in our back pocket and being able to lean on that. That to me has been probably the most impressive piece of what they've been defensively as well. So a lot of it is getting back to who they've always been on offense and then maybe kind of changing their identity a bit on defense. And it's been great for them this year.
Let's move to the Midwest. We saw Ohio State kick the ever-loving shit out of Michigan State. Again, it's kind of like you just said about the Utah game. Like, we obviously knew Ohio State was a better team, but you still don't expect this type of absolute beatdown. And I guess my only thing is, like, does it change how you feel, A, about Michigan State, and does it change how you feel about Michigan going into the game against Ohio State this weekend?
Does it change how I feel about Michigan State? Not really, because I think that, you know, they've basically been successful on offense with explosive play variance by their running back. And when it works, it works. But I think that everybody could recognize the fact that they did not have another curveball, you know, or a changeup if that was not available to them. And they happened to run into a team that was talented enough up front to be able to take away the space that Kenneth Walker had been able to work with to create all the offense with his legs. So that part was not that surprising. I mean, obviously, you don't. I didn't expect them to just march down the field, just drive after drive after drive, especially in the first half. But that, to me, is a credit to what Ohio State is offensively right now. Like, they are 100% back in machine mode, run the ball when we want, pass the ball deep when we want. Everything is open. And C.J. Stroud, you know, I think the Heisman train has been picking up a lot for him lately, and I do think that a lot of that is justified based on the way that he's looked this year. So, you know, I don't feel any differently about Michigan State. As far as Michigan is concerned, I mean, they've handled all their business outside of, you know, the weird game against Michigan State, where I still think that they probably were the better team on a snap-by-snap basis and lost that game on variance in the second half. I still think that they have a puncher's chance on Saturday, you know, against Ohio State. I don't think that they're the better team, and I definitely think if – this has been the offense basically since the Nebraska game, right? Outside of that hiccup, if that's the offense you're going to get from Ohio State, it's not going to matter what kind of defense you're playing outside of, you know, Athens, Georgia, basically. That's about it. That's the only team I can see that can hang with them with what they're doing on offense. Does anything change for you in terms of what those teams look like right now?
I probably lean even harder on Ohio State, even though we've been saying it, both of us have been saying it for a few weeks, that we really like this Michigan team. And we did feel like, I mean, it's going to work out in the sense that this is going to end up being, you know, the winner goes to the championship game. So it, even though they lose to Michigan State earlier, they do get this game as a pseudo semifinal. Right. So, but we both have really enjoyed Michigan. We like the way they've changed, especially on defense from the Don Brown years, who we both really like. I just look at Ohio State now and they're just too good. That's it. That's the analysis. They're just too good. And one of the things that they do really well, they're really good at attacking safeties no matter what you coverage you play them in. So obviously you don't want to play. No one's going to play a ton of man-to-man against them because every receiver that's on the field is better than every cornerback you pretty much have on the field. Plus they didn't get Iowa or Wisconsin this year. So, you know, tough to see them against like two of the supposedly best defenses in the conference. And, you know, Iowa's got those two cornerbacks that are pretty good. So would have liked to see that. However, so you don't play them against in man. And then you're like, okay, well, we're going to play cover three. You know, if we want to play zone, okay, we'll play cover three. You're saying, okay, we're going to live one-on-one on the outside. They'll beat you there. Okay, mm-hmm. They'll just beat you one-on-one on the outside, and this kind of is what it is. But what they do so well now, and it started a couple of years ago, was they run Y-cross all the time because Ryan Day, he's a Chip Kelly acolyte. Chip Kelly, Y-cross, that's the play. Get that guy across the field. So tough against zone because you lose him when he comes across the field and climbs. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing now is on the backside of that route, you know, it used to be a curl route, like an 18-yard curl route, a 15-yard curl route. All right, if we work our eyes all the way back, bang, we hit a curl route. And now it's all post route on the backside. And, dude, if you're the middle of the field safety and you creep for 1 second, you're cooked. You're over toast. The top. You saw toast. Fields do it. You're seeing Stroud do it. They did it again against I saw him do it against Purdue. I saw him do it against Michigan State. I saw him do it last year against Nebraska. Like, it's non-stop like that.
Honestly, it's to the point now where if I see their quarterbacks get big shoulders and go over the top, I know it's because the post is open.
Yeah.
Like, it is 100% that throw is wide open, and it's probably Garrett Wilson about to score a touchdown. Dude.
And then, so you're like, okay, well, we can't do that because not only are we singling up our players outside, But you know, our safety ends up being in no man's land because, you know, he's trying to jump the dig and now they're throwing the crosser and then throwing behind his head. And if he stays deep, they throw the crosser because we can't be in man and we can't get body presence on the crosser, et cetera. So you say, all right, well, let's play split safeties. Uh-oh. And dude, they're so good right now at splitting the safeties. It's craziness. I've never, they're one of the best, you know, college teams that we've seen in a long time at getting that route between the safeties. And you cannot, cause like you're, I don't know how, because you're like, all right, well, if we're going to play split safeties, we're doing it so we can protect our cornerbacks, which means we got to split really wide and they're hitting you right between the middle. And if you don't split wide, then they're going to take their shot on the outside. Yep. So, or if you don't split really wide, cause you're in more of a quarters look, you're going to get those cornerbacks off and they're going to take the 10 yard hitch every day.
Yep. Every day.
It's so hard because
it's machine, like the machine, it is truly they are a play calling machine. All they need to do is find your safety shell, and once they've got your safety shell figured out, they've got their handful of plays. And like it honestly, it comes down to a point where it doesn't even matter that you can scout it out and you know what's coming, because you know we're sitting at home and we know what routes are coming. I'm pulling up, you know, some of their tape on PFF, and I know what concept is coming, but it doesn't matter. Because they also have guys that win one-on-ones. They have guys that can work themselves open. You know, and this isn't even mentioning the fact that if you also want to get in split safety, they can still just mash you between the tackles. Well,
yeah, that's
and that's what's really sick, right? Is that you can't play split safety and then be like, okay, we're going to do that and then just get a ton of depth, right, to protect ourselves against, you know, these seams and posts. No, because they got Trevion Henderson, right? And that guy is a real dude as a running back. One of the best running backs in the country. And I don't even know if he cracks the top five in talent on their offense. And he's one of the best players in the country. That's where they're at right now. So for that reason, I just don't know. I don't know what the formula is outside of saying, like, doing what a guy like a Kirby Smart would do, right? Which is to say, we'll play outgapped in the box basically all day long because we have animals up front and we're just going to play tight coverage. And if you got to run the ball 35 times to beat us, you got to run the ball 35 times to beat us. There are just not teams in the Big Ten that can live in that world, right? Like outside of the only two defenses I've seen in the Big Ten that I think could potentially give this offense trouble is A, in Michigan, because they do a lot. They also do a lot and they're very good up front, especially on their edges. So if they want to play more odd front stuff, I could see them being able to maintain their edges well enough to not just get the ball bending back on runs all day. And I've liked their DB play all year. And the only other team I could see maybe is Wisconsin for the same reason, right? Because they have a certain dedication to being able to set those edges and playing, you know, the kind of coverage that you need to take away some of the explosive plays behind it. But man, it's tough to watch right now and try to figure out a formula to slowing down what they do offensively.
I don't think Trevion Henderson needs to play college football next year. Like, he is so different.
He can go be
an
NFL
different
back.
Dude. Yeah. He's different. This guy is special. All right. So that's kind of, and they might play Wisconsin in the championship game. If they get through Michigan, then, you know, they're either going to play, I guess, Wisconsin or Iowa in the championship game.
Which I mean, there's a really chance that they see four straight good defenses between Michigan, whoever they play in the Big Ten championship game, assuming they win, who they play in the semifinal, and then obviously assuming that they see Georgia in the final or Alabama or whoever, you know, is on the other side of the bracket. You know, they're going to be, if they're going to win a championship, they're going to go through the best, basically all the best defenses that we have in college football.
Plus Penn State and Nebraska, you know, in the two games before that. So, and oh, the one thing I want to say is when I watch the Nebraska tape, I think this is probably the only way, and it's cheating, but it's the only way you're going to have some success against them. You got to hold their receivers. You got to play zone. And when they run through your zone, you got to hold them. Yep. Like, hope your pass rush gets there. And Nebraska was doing a good, you know, quote unquote, good job of that. That is literally one of the ways you do it. It's like you don't allow them off the line of scrimmage. You bump them off the route. And there's a play where I think they're running like some sort of split. You know, they have the slot back split out. So it's a two receiver look. And they're running four verts, which they run all the time. And the slot runner, I think it was a tight end, he gets bumped so hard. He gets jammed so hard off his line when he's trying to run that straight line seam. He gets bumped so hard. And Stroud is just staring at him, waiting for him. It takes him like 10 seconds to like bend his right back to the seam. But the offensive line is so good, and Stroud just knows that that ball is going to be open at some point. He's wait, hitch, and he throws it, and they get a completion out of it. But I think that is the one of the ways to do that. And honestly, it's the way good teams play play defense, period. Like, if you're not cheating like that, you're not trying. So,
yeah.
All right. That was hashtag CFB talk. Let's get back to the NFL to close this thing out. We have three offenses we want to talk about. Let's start with who do you want to start with? Colts offense.
So when I watch the Colts, and I'm interested to see if you agree with this, like, and this is not just exclusive to them. They just happen to have a very talented interior offensive line and obviously one of the best running backs in the NFL. But the way that they're designing it, specifically, you know, with what I saw against the Bills, all of it is like formationally and motion-wise to try to manipulate the rotation of the safeties. So that way you're wasting defenders. And that way you can get your running back running into open space, especially if you're dealing with teams that want to play more single high. And they're gonna, and they're seeing more of it on a week-by-week basis now because they're so dominant running the ball and because Wentz has obviously had his struggles as a passer this year. So, you know, they're able to use these jet motions to move defenders, and then they're running the ball the opposite way. The same thing that we've seen the Rams do, right? Like, they're just running inside zone, basically, over and over again. You know, they had a few runs of trap this past week that popped really big that I thought looked good. Loved
it. Yeah.
But for the most part, their bread and butter is getting into 11 personnel under center or getting into 12 personnel under center, motioning guys back and forth, setting up these nub formations, these bunches. Same thing that we've been seeing basically for the last, what, like 4 or 5 years in the NFL, and getting guys out of the way. It's just finding ways to waste defensive players and running opposite of those guys as they adjust to, you know, all these different formations and looks. That to me has been the biggest thing. You know, they're just one of the better zone running football teams in the NFL right now.
Yeah, I thought when I watched them against the Bills, when they matched them up, there was a lot of, like you said, movements. I think I got the line. So first thing, like you said, the Bills played a lot of single high. They put another body in the box, and it still kind of didn't work because at the end of the day, if you got bodies inside and the Colts got bodies inside, they're going to mash you a little bit. And I think all that, there was so much action in the linebackers. It was like Milano and Klein. Klein, I mean, oof. I love that guy when he played for New Orleans, but it wasn't very good against the Colts on Sunday. And a lot of times you felt like the linebackers are kind of just guessing. Like, hey, yeah. D-line's getting pushed back. And there was this action here and there was this action in front of me here. And like, I'm just
going to guess. I think the ball is going to go this way, so I'm just going to shoot. So to the point about your movement, they ran 66 plays on Sunday. You want to guess how many of them had a motion attached to it?
49.
You're close. 47. So 71% of all of their plays had a motion attached to it. And I'm going to find how many of their runs had a motion attached to it as well. They were just able, again, it's all about manipulation, right? Just trying to find where defenses are weak. And when you're dealing with a team like Buffalo, and I've mentioned this before, they play very specific matchup wise because of their defensive backfield. Right, that they really only want to do certain things in certain directions. So if you're motioning your slot, they probably want to send the nickel with them, right? They don't want to kick their backer out of the box. Well, now that means that as he moves, if you want to play single high, you got to change the rotation and go the opposite way, or you got to push the backers opposite of the motion. That's a lot of communication and a lot of movement that's happening, which is why you end up with linebackers saying, well, I'm here, I don't really know where I'm fitting, but I think the ball is being run this way, so I'm just going to shoot, right? Or I'm just going to run off the edge, or I'm just going to rock back to what my original gap was because I don't remember exactly where I'm supposed to fit at. So on their runs, you know, it's 76% of the time they're bringing motion. So a lot of that, you know, a lot of that stuff is, again, just the recipe that we know, that we've learned in the last, you know, four half decade or so about how to attack these single high defenses, whether they're showing a too high shell or just, you know, kind of four across on the underneath with their underneath defenders. That ability to create that movement was just giving, you know, Buffalo fits all day long.
And I think the next thing is how many gaps they were creating next to each other.
Yes.
By all the condensed formations they were running, it felt like they were never in, you know, to run the football, it felt like they were never in like a 2x2 spread. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or even just a one tight end 2x2 or 3x1. Like it just felt like they were getting bodies in there. So now who's got which gap? Like it's not just, oh, well, we're in 2x2 spread. So there's two A's, two B's, and two C's. It's like, now there's a D gap here. There might be an E gap here. The E gap just moved. It wasn't the C gap that moved. It was the D gap that moved. You know what I mean? So it's like
right.
All of that stuff. And then they hit them with a few nice looks where they used, like you said, those trap blocks from the tight ends. Mm-hmm. So that off-ball H-back player was running that. I've heard it been called crunch before. I think that's crunch in like the Harbaugh playbook, where it's like wham, but it's to the same side.
Right.
And then the running back. So it's such a good play because with a normal trap, you're coming from one of the players from one side of the offense is coming and trapping the defensive player on the opposite side of the offense. Right. And what they're doing is trapping a same side player, and the running back's path. It's not an easy path for the running back, but he makes it seem like he's coming to one side and then he veers it all the way back and they have to find that hole a couple times, which is really good. They have an influence block as well to really get the defense going that way. And then Jonathan Taylor was kind of out the back door to a certain degree, even though that was the front side where the hole is. And that was really nice. And they had an insert play as well that went for some good yards. Mm-hmm. And again, it was all against a gapped out defense. You know, like, and I think that was really, because we're going to talk about a team that did it all against an out-gap defense in a second. But like this team was, the Bills were playing one high. And like you said, they were having to rotate in weird ways because of all the motion, because of all the condensed formations that the Colts were doing. And that was just mashing them. You know, they weren't going for 20 every play. Like, again, the next team we're going to talk about, it felt like. However, mm-hmm. This was a mauling, and they just couldn't find the right gaps half the time, and then they were getting beat inside. And yeah, there you go. I think that was the story of the day for this Bills defense and a Colts offense that, man, it's Frank Reich. He's good, man.
Very, very sneakily. I still don't like their let me put it this way. I like their receivers. I don't like their quarterback right now, and I like the design of their passing game. They've been able to kind of work around some of Wentz's holes. But when you add what they're doing on the ground, what they've been doing on the ground basically for the last month, on top of what I think has been like sneakily one of the best run defenses in the NFL that probably does not get its just due, and a defense that's obviously built to try to take away the explosive passes, that's how you're able to get to, you know, in spite of the fact that I don't think anybody's maybe in love with who the Colts are from a talent perspective, a team that can be competitive. You know, like I think that they're probably firmly behind. You know, I think if you consider the Patriots to be like that legitimate sleeper, you know, sneaky, you know, contending team that you're not looking at or maybe haven't been given the right amount of the attention to prior to the last 2 weeks, I think the Colts are probably right behind them and their brand of football. Again, this is the perfect kind of team to sneak around and beat a team that is definitely, you know, better than them in the wild card, you know, if things continue to trend this way.
And you know what? Well, you talk about the wildcard round. Oh, I don't know, man. They might win the fucking division because
sneakily, yes.
Tennessee, they lost. They lost to Houston. They might start. This whole thing might unravel in Tennessee very quickly.
I might have to shut up about Ryan Tannehill actually being a real quarterback. That's definitely not what it looked like. I mean, obviously the elements are bad, missing your top two receivers basically for the majority of the game. You know, it's not maybe not the most fair scenario to judge a guy, but some of the.
But I will say the whole point is that there are people out there who tell me that Ryan Tannehill is really good.
Right.
So he should be able to deal with this stuff.
Especially against the Texans. It would be one thing if you did that against the Patriots. I can understand that. But the Texans.
And they have not been good in the three games since Henry has gone out. I think 18th in EPA per play in those 3 weeks. So they've been okay, but they haven't been the Titans. Titans are finished like number one in EPA per play last year. And they were top seven, top eight, I think, something like that before the injury. This is a team that needs a duo downhill run game. And they need receivers who can break off in the intermediate level. And they don't have that. Tannehill has nothing.
Yeah, they just don't have it right now.
So I could see the Colts parlaying this recent success into into winning the division. The problem is that, you know, they got to catch them. They got a few games to catch them. Yeah, I was going
to say they're just behind right now.
And, you know, if A.J. Brown is back, if Julio Jones is back, then that's going to be tough. But I could see it happening easily.
I will say this. If the Colts find a way to win on Sunday against Tampa, then we really got to open up a different conversation about team is at.
Probably have to open up a conversation about Tampa as well.
Tampa as well, yeah. So they got Tampa on Sunday, then they play the Texans, and then they got the Patriots. So two of the next three are going to be really tough telling, you know, conversations about where this team is at. And if they find a way to come out of that, you know, 2-1, then they're probably sitting pretty for the remainder of the season.
All right, it is time for our weekly segment that everyone loves called This Is What Happens When You Play Outgapped in the Run Game, brought to you by PFF. Right now you can get 40% off any PFF subscription if you use the promo code Cyber40. Grades and data are live for every single player who logged a snap last week. Go check out the highest graded players from week 12. What can you get with a PFF subscription? All of PFF's locked article content, PFF's NFL and college football betting dashboards, our grade power projections, cover probabilities and betting values, 0 to 100 grades of every single player, including the top rookies in every team, player prop tool, and much, much, much more. Support the pod and use promo code CYBER40 for 40% off any sub. All right. Being outgapped and getting gashed in the run game. Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about the Philadelphia offense against the New Orleans Saints defense. We sat here, we said, oh, this is a great run defense that New Orleans has. And honestly, they do have a great run defense.
Right.
But this was a plan by the Philadelphia Eagles that was sickening, that just gashed them at every turn. The Saints, we talked about this last week. Hey, look at how cool they are. They're sitting too high and they stop the run. And guess what happens when you add an option element across the field? It can get tough. It can get really tough. Yeah. And they kind of didn't have enough bodies to deal with Hurts as a runner on top of a very good offensive line that is gelling in Philadelphia. And a game plan that was sick. That was sick. I was going to say,
it's not, to me, the conversation honestly expands beyond just two high versus single high, right? It's also like four down versus three down. Mm-hmm. And this is what I talked about. When I wrote about, you know, how well they had fit the run last week out of four down with two high safeties, the conversation, you know, was kind of part of what we were talking about at the start of this podcast, right? Like, what you're asking your linebackers to do when there are gaps open versus when there are not. Interior gaps between the guards is what I mean, you know, from B-gap to B-gap, when those are open versus when they're not. So because the Saints still want to keep, because they have good pass rushers, right? Like, they want to keep their two good edge rushers, you know, and their good interior defensive linemen in situations where they can get one-on-ones. Well, if you want to do that and also take away a lot of the routes that you see against single high in four down and play too high, now you've got this open space in between the tackles that, you know, is an area of stress. And basically what we've seen, or what we saw on Sunday, that we really hadn't seen throughout the year, was an offense in Philadelphia that found a way to manipulate and attack that. So again, it's talking about manipulation, right? With the Colts, it was manipulating run support players. So getting those guys that, you know, those safeties who roll down outside the box, getting them moving so that way you can isolate linebackers. This is, you're trying to get to the same end by different means with what Philly was doing to New Orleans. So, you know, that read game allows them to eliminate a defensive end, right? And you want to eliminate the defensive end to the side of the open gap, to the side of the open bubble, because that opens up a lot of space. So now, not only are you reading a guy, so if he makes a wrong move, you can punish him for it. If he does nothing, you know, if he just surfs down the line and forces the give, well, now you've got basically your tackle and your guard working downhill, right? Giving you that kind of veer action where you're really kind of mashing all the guys inside of the B gap, of that B gap bubble. And now when you get cutbacks, there's nobody home. Or the guy who's supposed to come fit is coming from depth. He's coming from a wider position.
He's the safety, yeah.
Right, exactly. You know, it's a harder run fit. The running back has got an angle on him, and there's also space, right? This guy's coming from however far away, you're going to get 4 or 5 yards before you're even a threat to be tackled. So because of that, you know, you're really able to kind of punish a team that way. And then from there, you saw all the different ways that Philly was able to kind of build off of that. So getting into those nub formations where it's a tight end on one side, three wide receivers on the other. Now you're really tilting a defense in a certain way, right? You're kind of forcing a too high defense to set itself a particular way. And now you're able to manipulate it that much more because now you're kicking all of these defensive players who could cover for this guy way out, you know, and you kind of get into those issues that we've talked about, guys being, you know, out of the run fit, meaning that they don't have any gap responsibility in the box, you know, and the more of those situations that you run into, the more difficult it is when you start getting into these read games where you're cutting defenders out. Again, just like we were talking about with the Colts, it's all about finding ways to waste defenders. And that was the number one thing that Philadelphia was able to do. It really wasn't so much Hurts keeping it, though the one keep that he did that he scored on where, you know, he took the pants off a defensive lineman, that was obviously an impressive run. But for the most part, it's more just like, how do we waste these guys on the edge and beyond to be able to run the ball in between the tackles? And that's what the design of that offense was able to do on Sunday.
So I think that you talk about the I'll start with the chip snub. I have a few things I want to talk about. We'll start with that chip snub. So they're running with three split receivers, you know, wide out, slot to one side. And they're putting Dallas Goedert, or whoever it was, I think it was mostly Goedert, as the only receiver on the backside, but he's attached, right? He's playing tight end. And you're putting Hurts and the running back, Sanders or whoever, in the backfield together. And the Saints wanted to play too high. So to a certain degree, and we talked about this when Oregon beat Ohio State, one of the issues we had in that game was that Ohio State, given what they were on defense, they always wanted to be in one high. So what that meant was you had a very soft edge to the nub side. And look, Oregon also got into 4x0 sets, so they really tried to soften that edge as much as they could. But you have a really soft side. So we said, hey, you know, if you don't want to give that up, you can play too high and keep the corner and the safety back there. However, the main thing, if you're going to keep the corner backside, he's going to be low and in a cover two type of feel. I told this to you before, he's got to get his nose dirty. Because or else you're not just losing one player, you're losing two players against the run. And you're probably talking about NFL corners who want to play man-to-man all day. So they're putting, you know, and they tried to put Paulson Adebo there. They tried to put Bradley Roby there. They did not put Marshon Lattimore at all there. So that was, and then they were just running at there, and then they didn't really have an answer. And then the other thing that I thought was interesting was, to the trip side, the Saints were playing DeMario Davis at Mike. So now, if you are a too high team and you don't have that extra player in the box at linebacker level, well, the Mike's got to walk out a bit to trips. So all of a sudden, your best player is walking all the way outside the box. So yeah, you're not going to give up that bubble RPO that they want to throw. No problem. They're saying, oh, you're leaving Quan Alexander by himself in the box with a corner who doesn't want to tackle? I got no problem running the football right now. And Quan made a couple of good plays, but that's Quan, right? So he's an average linebacker, and that's the problem. So that was such a good way to get schematically to get two people who one guy who doesn't really want to tackle and one guy who's just an okay linebacker to have to fit the run time and time again. And then they had trouble with it. You know, one of the things about we talk about this. I don't know how much we've talked about this on the pod, but we certainly have talked about this privately a lot, is when you're playing against an option team, one of the issues is that the option has a guy running in what's called the alley on every play, basically. Whether it's an inverted play or a regular option play, if the ball is going to the outside, he's running into the alley. So what a lot of teams do against option teams, especially at lower levels, is they say, okay, well, instead of us saying, hey, we're going to get into the box with a whole bunch of linebackers and play like a 4-4 or 4-3 or something like that, where we can get the issues that we just talked about with Buffalo doing that against the Colts and people moving around and then people getting the run gap, whatever. What we're going to do is we're actually going to play too high, except those two safeties are triggering at rapid speed.
Right.
It is happening right now. if you see the ball come to your side, you are downhill into that alley. So you end up with, instead of just an 8-man box, you kind of end up with a 9-man box because the two safeties are part of the fit. Well, the safe Saints, and I get it, they don't want to do that because they're this is the NFL.
Right.
I mean, I got to get deep.
That's cover zero at a certain level, right? You're just playing cover zero at that point. I mean, that's a dangerous way to live in the NFL.
So when the run gets to the alley, well, your safety's coming from depth. And they made tackles. So that was the funny thing. There wasn't, off the top of my head, there wasn't a ton of runs that went for 50. There wasn't a ton of runs that even went for 30. But there was a ton of runs that went for 15.
Right.
And that is because, well, the safety's got to come out the roof late and then make a tackle. And they did. They didn't allow things to snowball on each individual play, but they allowed things to snowball throughout drives and stuff like that, which was really just, again, a great game plan by the Eagles. The Saints tried to mitigate some of that stuff by moving gaps on the defensive line post-snap. Slant here, slant there. It didn't really work. Could have worked. Didn't work. There was only one or two plays where a guy kind of got free because he slanted into a gap. And then the Eagles, offensive line didn't account for it. Christian Ringo made a play. But besides that, it was like really, really interesting. The next thing I want to talk about is that one play they fucking ran where here they go again in a trips type of formation. This time they're going bunch with three receivers. Actually, I think it was one tight end on the peak.
One tight end and two receivers.
Yep. And two receivers to the bunch side, and then a receiver split out in a normal split isolated to the weak side. And I'm doing this from memory, so I hope I get this right. But
I'm looking right at it. So,
all right. All right, let's see if I get all the points right here. They're taking one of the bunch receivers and they're jetting him to the one receiver side. Mm-hmm. Now the Saints aren't too high. Okay, the Saints aren't too high. So what that does for the Will linebacker is, who's outside of the Will? Ain't nobody.
Nobody.
The weak safety's, 10 yards behind him. So he's like, oh shit, I can't get out leveraged by this jet motion. So I got to work my ass outside. So he saw the jet and he works his ass outside. They never gave it. I don't believe they ever gave the jet in that formation. Okay. The Will is done. So the Will in the corner and the safety are out of the play, period. Just by that jet motion. Formation and jet motion and the way the Saints wanted to play it. And then, like I said, the Mike linebacker in a too high system has to be plussed over to the strong side. And what they did was they would jet motion, go counter read to the same
to
side
the
as
motion.
The jet motion. Right. So now you have the
in a lot tackle. Of ways, it's almost like you got three pullers, right? Like
exactly.
Got three pullers.
Exactly. So now you have tackle a guard coming from the backside to where the Will was supposed to be. And now the Mike's got to fight over from the strong side all the way to the weak side. And he's still 2-on-1 or 1-on-2 in that sense. Especially with how good the interior was getting mashed up by the all the down blocks that they were getting by the Eagles. So now the Will's got to – not so the Mike, DeMario Davis, has to come all the way on top. And the Eagles are reading – the backside defensive end. So Hurts kept it a couple times. He had two lead blockers that were part of that bunch. And you have nothing because now you're getting both linebackers are compromised if you keep it. So now you just got to block the nickel, which they did on one play, I remember, the first one. And you're gone. And
there's nobody home.
There's nobody home on both sides. It didn't even matter who the ball went to. There was no one home to the GT counter or to the read side. Unbelievable play. They killed them with it all game.
There are a lot of snaps where they ran this where there was a puller climbing the field that literally just did not have another human being to block because the design of the play was so good that they wasted basically all of the Saints' defensive players on both sides of the formation. I mean, again, that kind of comes to the point of manipulating space in between the tackles in the run game. And something that I think probably does not get enough credence paid to it is the ways in which you can manipulate this kind of stuff. And one of the reasons why, playing too high out of four down at the NFL level is kind of a dangerous proposition, right? Like, because of what you said, you don't always want to have to ask your safeties to go get involved in the run fit. Like, that's one of the reasons why when we talked last week about what the Patriots are doing to the Browns, right? Like, it's super impressive. They're playing Tampa 2, which kind of does require some safety involvement. Like, you kind of are maxing out your run fit in a way. What they were doing, what the Saints are doing, is trying to keep guys out of the run fit, right? Because you're playing too high for a specific reason, to try to eliminate these explosive passes, especially on play actions or RPOs, which was clearly the game plan. Even when they were in single high, you know, they were able to find some space on some of the stuff. And a lot of that is just finding ways to waste these defenders and get your running back before he's ever, you know, taken contact 4 or 5 yards up the field. The way you described it was exactly it. You know, they were able to pop, you know, a really big one. I think with Jordan Howard as a running back, right up the middle of the field before the safety was able to get to him. And a lot of these were efficient runs, even if they weren't explosive, because there was just so much airspace that they were able to work into, because all these guys are just flying sideways, right? It's the same thing we talked about with the wide zone with jet motion, right? You got all these guys who are just wasted moving side to side while the ball is being cut up between the tackles. And that to me was probably outside of the inside zone read stuff that they were doing. Some of that counter read off of jet action was probably my favorite looks that they had given. And that might be something that, you know, speaking specifically to Philadelphia, that they might be able to give teams a lot of trouble with for the rest of the year. And it's something that we see like teams like Baltimore do all the time to create these issues in run fits for teams.
Yeah, I mean, it really is like close to, they're an option team.
Basically.
That's all we have to say. They're an option team, and they're going to give teams some trouble who want to try and play an NFL style against that option. Mm-hmm. And then against the pass, you know, when they drop back, you know, I think who was doing the game? Baldinger and Adam Amin, I think. Anyways, they were talking about how the Saints defensive line was just gassed. Like, yeah, they couldn't get after the passer. And so, you know, Hurts can do whatever he wants there. And we know he's not this unbelievable passer, but if they can get the running game going and they can get zero pass rush and he could just run around the backfield and make a play late, then that's a team that's very interesting going forward. I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs this year, but I do think this style of offense, if Hurts is really good as an option quarterback, I think you can go out there. You have 3 picks in the first, whatever, 15 picks, 20 picks, whatever it may be, and pick some people around him that can get this thing going. And I'm not, you know, defense still not very good, but
right,
but offense is,
I mean, they interesting found something
enough. And I think Hurts has, again, I didn't think the thing with Hurts is, like, I didn't think he would be a good enough option quarterback,
right,
to offset the passing, the passing deficiencies. Like, I thought I didn't think he was this good, and maybe he's not. I mean, a lot of this was scheme oriented, what they were doing, but it's been working for the past few weeks, and good on them, on that, I guess.
Yes, sir.
All right, our last segment of the day is cover who? Cover two? No. Let's try something else. Our last segment of the day, as always, our weekly segment called Cover 2. Cover 2, Cover 2. All right, so that's presented by Western and Southern. Whether it's football success or financial savvy, the right questions help set the stage for winning strategies. Western and Southern is teaming up with PFF's very own Chris Collinsworth to share insights that can help put you ahead on both your fantasy and financial scoreboards. Want to hear about Chris's old playing days or behind the scenes with Al on Sunday Night Football? How about a need to know for your financial future? Now you can ask about either or both. And every football or financial question you ask earns you a chance to win a catered party for February's big game. Check out the Chris Collinsworth podcast and Western and Southern's Instagram for answers to the best questions each week. Submit your questions at westernsouthern.com/askchris. One more time, that is westernsouthern.com/askchris. If you're watching on YouTube, check out the link in the description below. Remember, with Western Southern, you can rest assured on game day. All right. Cover 2. It is beating the shit out of the Buffalo Bills. And it's funny because in a sense, certain things have come full circle, because we saw them in the playoff game last year against the Colts when they won at home before they played against Baltimore. Colts are a cover two team. They're a zone dropping team. They're gonna get deep and zone drop on you. And what did Mr. Allen do? He got out of the pocket. He locked eyes with the zone defenders and he threw over them. He threw into the spaces where they were staring at him because he's now outside the pocket. And things have come full circle since then. They play the Colts again. I don't think the offense was horrifyingly bad. They obviously got into a hole very early that was tough to get out of. But what are the Colts going to do? They're going to drop and they're going to play spot drop zone. And Allen's stats when he gets outside the pocket this year, especially against zone, are very bad. You can go read about those stats in the article that I wrote about the Bills offense on the website, pff.com. And it's like, oh man, like maybe we thought too much of Josh Allen doing all these so-called unsustainable things outside the pocket. Especially scrambling, especially like, are those things sustainable year to year? And they haven't been very good for him this year. And the Bills are just floundering right now.
It's blown me away, you know, just how bad he's been outside trying to extend plays against something like cover two, because that's just so opposite to what we saw last year. And then I remembered like, oh yeah, that's also like what he was before last year too, you know? So it's really just kind of like, he is dealing with like maybe one of them like ultimate regression to the means. And it does not mean that he's bad right now. Like he still got a 21 touchdown and 9 interceptions. Could be better, obviously. But what you're seeing is like, especially when he's dealing with cover two, is like him taking these just bad sacks. We've seen these bad sacks, you know, throughout the year. He's got 6 against cover two. We saw it when he opened the year against the Steelers. We saw him take a bad one. Right before half, you know, against the Colts. And he just hasn't been as productive against these types of things. And he's not finding as many explosive plays. To me, that is the biggest thing. Is that he hasn't found the explosive plays as an extending quarterback, against these types of softer zone looks this year.
They've been good in the intermediate areas, I think, where they can find that soft spot against certain coverages. The problem is, again, like if you're a defense and you're not going to play, we talked about this last week with how you layer your defense. Like you are not going to layer your first level of defense at 5 yards, at 7 yards against Josh Allen. You're going to layer them at 12 yards. Right. So all of a sudden that condenses that intermediate window. And he's still been good at finding these little deep curl routes, like intermediate dig routes in that window. He's such a better passer than he was, 2 years ago. But one of the issues has been, like you said, the lack of explosive plays. And I think one of the issues is, hey, how do we get a deep player open against cover two, for example, when it's not splitting the safeties like we talked about with Ohio State? Because that Mike linebacker is so deep and those two hook defenders are so deep that there's not that space to hit that safety splitting route. So what they've been trying to do, and you notice it in the film, is they're running them, and you see this a lot throughout the league because we're getting so much more cover two, is either a slot or the wideout kind of running a corner and up, because the cornerback is looking for a corner route because he knows, I'm playing cover two. What's the team going to do against me? They're going to run a corner, and I'm going to have to split the difference between the short route and the corner route. And what they're doing is they're running the corner, and then the receiver is blasting downfield, and he's getting open. Problem, they don't have time. And it kind of reminds me again of like the Chiefs. Yeah, all these routes are getting open downfield, sometimes late for the Chiefs. But those two tackles, and the tackles have obviously gotten better for Kansas City, but the two tackles in Buffalo are a lot worse than they were last year. So all of a sudden, that route is about to come open and Josh Allen doesn't want to stick around in the pocket. So either he bounces or he takes a sack or he throws a check down. And this is kind of why the Bills offense has kind of been able to stay afloat. Well, that... also, the fact that they haven't played an easy schedule, but he's Josh Allen, but he gets the checkdowns now, and that's super important for them because they are playing in such drop zone coverages. That's been super important to them, but they are getting people open kind of down the field. They just don't have the time, or Josh Allen doesn't want to throw it, and they just their vertical over the shoulder throws have just kind of dried up a bit.
I think one of the interesting things, and it only came up once, or at least they were really only able to take advantage of it to the degree that they did once, was when the Colts ran hot coverage in the third quarter, that they got the pick on that was batted in the air. a couple of times. So, but that to me, I think is also emblematic of the same things that we're talking about, right? Like this offense is built on generating those explosive looks down the field, even if that means that Allen has got to extend for it. And I think that the Colts were able to take advantage of that when they did get that interception on hot coverage, because what are you doing? You're rushing basically everybody you can outside of five defenders, but you're still playing deep. You're still playing with depth, protecting against these vertical passes. And what is that going to do for a quarterback when they're only releasing three into a route and you're running basically 989? So you got these two vertical routes on the outside and a crossing route in the middle of the field. The defense actually gets an opportunity to squeeze the play shut. So now, again, even though there are only like five coverage defenders, you're still playing in a tight window. And they teams have really been able to take advantage of the fact that, you know, Allen has just not been as good getting the football where it needs to go, you know, when it's not time to throw the ball vertically. You know, so for all the conversations that I think that were being had, I think prematurely about the issues that were happening with the Chiefs offense and not being able to create vertical plays, we probably would have been better served actually talking about what the Bills have not been able to do over the last month or so with generating explosive plays down the field.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the issues is we can talk, even though the same kind of issues are happening to both teams, I think we can talk about them a little differently because we have 3 years of great quarterback play and great offensive play from Patrick Mahomes, and we don't have that from Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. We have one great year. Great year. They might have even been better than the Chiefs last year. Regardless, has it all just come crashing down? Was that 1 year thing where they just blitz teams into submission, running their spread offense, 10 personnel, 11 personnel, 2x2, 3x1, and just no run game, doesn't matter. We're just going to throw no pass protectors. We're not going to keep a running back in. We're going to send everyone out. And now they're getting killed by these cover two and some pressure and all that good stuff. All right. I'm done talking. Are you done talking?
I am finished talking.
Good. Then I guess it's the end of the podcast. All right. We'll see you guys later this week.